Ladies and gentlemen, brought to you by Time and Place, live from Salt Lake City, Utah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are all very welcome to the Sideshow live from Salt Lake City. Can we get a round of applause? You're getting there. We were an all right. We'd be an all right bingo panto kind of a crowd. Hold on a sec. Let's just try this again. Live from. Hold on, Chris. You should do this.
Live from Salt Lake City, Utah. Woo!
That's a little bit more like it. Okay, well, let's get into this. Before we get any further, I just have to say a big thanks to all of you for turning up to the live show from the Mandate Press. We have had a wonderful, for those of you listening in the future and also in the past, should you own a DeLorean motor car, October 25th, 1985 is the date for those of you who are into pub quizzes and like Back to the Future. Let's get into this. Our guest on today's show, I am honored and delighted to say, is Fritz Coleman from Red Butte Gardens. Fritz, how are you?
I'm doing very well.
Yeah, indeed. For those who are not aware and can't see you at this moment in time and are listening and are walking at home in Dublin, you have, I would guess, the slight bit of red hair going on. So I was kind of going Irish. Then you said your name is Fritz. Then you said Coleman. I went, right, okay, we have a right back called Seamus Coleman, plays for Ireland. Yeah.
Yeah.
Explain this to me like I'm a two-year-old. How did this all happen? Have you got Irish blood in you?
I do. I'm a quarter Irish, yeah. A half German and then the rest is French-Canadian.
Okay, the better quarter is Irish. What quarter is Irish and where is that from exactly? Do you know?
Oh, you know, I don't know. I'm shamefully unaware of my heritage.
Right, we'll say Westmead just for example. How's everybody in Westmead doing, Fritz?
They're doing wonderfully, thank you.
This is, we're getting places. Are you coming marching with us in St. Patrick's Day Parade in Utah?
I might just do that, we'll see.
You're gonna have to, otherwise I'm going to make up information about you and tell everybody about it over this microphone. I'll ask you again, are you coming on to St. Patrick's Day Parade?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Thanks, Fritz. That's brilliant, isn't it? Isn't that very good one?
Yeah.
It was that easy. All right, let's get into this because I was in part of what I gather is Red Butte today, this morning.
You were?
Yeah. What is Red Butte Garden for those who are not aware?
So Red Butte Garden is a botanical garden. It's part of the University of Utah, and it's situated on the east bench at the very top of the city.
What makes, and I don't mean this as in, you know, people would say to me, what makes Ireland so beautiful? And I'd say, well, it's landscape shaped by the rainfall or it's the weather elements or whatever the case may be. In this case, everywhere I've gone, everybody I've spoke to, hold on a sec, Chris Hollifield, you've been to Red Butte Gardens. What's it like? How good?
It is beautiful. Just right up there against the mountains. And especially what I love about Red Butte Gardens is the concerts in the summertime, but that's besides the point.
Would you go there, Chris, to spend time at the weekends with the family? Is that kind of a garden?
Yeah, just kind of walk through and check out all the flowers and plants and whatnot.
Okay. Fritz, actually, what's your title there?
My title is horticulturist. So I manage a specific area, and then I have my own crew of people that work for me.
So how did you get there? Where
did
it all go? Yeah, did you grow plants under your bed?
You know what? I didn't get into plants until I was in my early 20s. In fact, I scarcely noticed that plants existed until then.
What did you do before that?
Well, I'm not really sure. I did a lot of skateboarding and a lot of partying, we'll say. Yeah.
For those of you who are not aware, and you'll have a hard time finding this photograph, but there is a photograph of me and my sister Liz, who stands at about 5'2". And I'm obviously a little bit taller with size 13 shoes. And I've got long curly hair and down below my shoulders. It's tucked behind my ears. And when I went out on my own in business, 25 years of age, I literally got it all taken off. Just about. Essentially, I got your haircut, but I'm less the beard. Did you do that when you gave up the skateboarding and went into what you're doing now? Is that a silly question?
Oh, you know, I still haven't given it up. Not given up the skateboarding. No, and I've had the beard for a long time. It started as a bet. So, yeah.
You kept it back on. But you've got that sensible look about you. What was the step into horticulture? What was that catalyst? What made you turn around and go, that's what I want to do?
You know, I just kind of had a revelatory moment where I realized the earth was completely covered in plants for the most part, especially where I was at the time, and that I didn't know anything about them. And so I just started there. But yeah, my mother-in-law is an herbalist. And so once I met my current wife, I just was helping out in the vegetable garden, and I enjoyed it. I found something that I was interested in that Had endless amounts of stuff to learn about.
You said your mother-in-law, right? Yeah. So I've got this thing in my head where the mother-in-law, essentially you come in, you steal the daughter, you take her away, you don't pay the dowry, and she says, that fella over there, I'm not too keen on him, kind of thing. And that kind of happens.
Yeah, that,
but you were able to help out in the vegetable garden. Yes. Were you trying to earn what I would call brownie points?
You know, a little bit. Yeah, I did need to do that. Yeah, I was a little bit outside of the box for suitors.
Okay, so she warmed you eventually. You got there.
Yeah, I was out there tackling the 10-foot lamb's quarters, and so someone had to do that.
Okay.
I could do it.
Okay, for those who are back home in Dublin, listen to this. What is Red Butte Gardens? Give me a little bit of history to it. Where did it all start? How long is it on the go?
So it is a 100-acre botanical garden. It features a whole bunch of themed gardens. We've got a lot of your standard botanical garden fare. We've got a rose garden, an herb garden. There's a medicinal garden. And about 80% of it is natural area, so it's native plants to the Salt Lake foothills. And then the area that I manage is a new area that's not quite open yet called the Water Conservation Garden.
Now, that's a funny one because we had, and again, you've got an audience listening to this who are part UK, part Ireland, and I remember having Tim Entwistle, who is the curator or the director of the Royal Botanic Gardens Victoria in Australia. And when we're talking about how we maybe try and conserve water at home in Ireland, like a couple of water barrel butts off the gutters or the downpipes will essentially do it for you. Tim was saying to me that no, he's essentially having to, and I don't want to misquote him, you'll have to go listen back to it, but essentially that he was almost, the gardens were evolving into a point where the plants were a little bit more tolerant of how the world and the environment is changing. Is that what you're getting at? Is it like a bit of a test area?
Yeah, exactly. It's a pretty large test area. It's about 3 acres. But yes, that's what we're doing. We're using earthworks to kind of control the water, slow it down, get it to infiltrate where we want it. And we're choosing plants that are better adapted to this environment.
So what, and give me this again, and I'll refer to those listening in Dublin or in London, 5 typical plants that you would have in, let's say, the gardens of maybe 20 years ago, 10 years ago in Red Butte.
Let's see. Well, some of them are applicable to low water situations as well, but some of the older plants that we would have, let me think for a second here. Maybe we'd have like a Korean barberry, for example, is one of them that we'd have, and we substitute that for Fendler's barberry, which is a low water version of that. Okay. Looks virtually the same, but it doesn't have the same water requirements.
Okay, I should add we are live and we are in Salt Lake City and it is St. Patrick's weekend as we record and we do have our in-house band. They're going to give us 2 minutes of a jingle and we'll just pause for this for a little bit. Take a listen to this stuff. This is good. Thank you very much. That was Rusted Steel. We are indeed coming to live. Chris, we have a lot of people behind the scenes who help put this show together. Who are? Can we have a couple of names of our sponsors?
You bet. We got some great people, some great sponsors. Mandate Press, 90.9 KRCL, Bare Bones Living, the Hibernian Society of Utah, the King's English Bookshop, and Wasatch Community Gardens.
And we also have our very wonderful Chris from the I Am Salt Lake podcast talking to us today. It's a pleasure, an absolute pleasure and honor to have you here this evening, my good man. Also, we have Greg Downs behind the scenes down the back, who's on sound with his another right-wing man. He'll get his mention on the next three shows. He's not getting it this evening. I just need to make sure you press his record before I thank him for it. We're on double record this evening. But that's that. Let's get back to Fritz Coleman from Red Butte Gardens, if we can. Fritz, how is landscaping, or I guess gardens, and what you're trying to do, how's that changing and how is that adapting? Is there a style thing that's in there? Is it a necessity?
Yeah, it's both. It stems from a necessity to reduce water in local landscapes. If you drive around Salt Lake, you'll see almost everyone has a lawn in their front yard. And we get about 16 inches of rain here a year. Almost all of it is snow. And so there's any lawn that you see is watered, you know, 2-3 times a week.
Okay, but is that having an effect on, let's say, if I was to go to somewhere like Chelsea Flower Show, where the sod show is it's a regular staple for it, to be quite fair. But when I look at the gardens that are done there, and you see how they're taking these things into consideration, you see the evolution, you see the design, and you see Charlotte Harris is going there, and she's got one based on the landscape of Canada. I mean, I can only imagine that if you did one that was stereotypically Irish, and he did one that was stereotypically Canadian, just to differentiate for a minute, that they would be vast extremes if they were based on modern day now today. Are you finding that in how domestically or locally people are building gardens and putting them together, how landscape contractors are doing it? And also in that, you know, when we go to somewhere like the gardens at Wisley, they've got like a test bed where the box blight, the Bux of sempervirens, has had this bug come in and essentially affected, I say bug, sorry, disease, but come in and affected. But they've got a whole area dedicated to trialing other plants that will do a similar job, hopefully in anticipation to that one plant. Do you have a role at that level?
Yeah, we do quite a bit of that. And the new garden up at Red Butte has a lot of examples of that. So, for example, people might grow maiden grass, Miscanthus, a really tall, lovely ornamental grass, but it requires quite a bit of water. And so you could substitute a native grass, a giant sacaton, which is an enormous 10-foot thing that grows out in the salty flats by the Great Salt Lake, and has a really similar look, but requires maybe like 1/8 of the amount of water.
So if I went into Red Butte, let's say in the morning, and I know if to go there, I think, am I going tomorrow morning? I believe I am. But if I head there and I take a look at it, will I be able to turn around before I landscape my own garden and say, well, that actually works quite well, that would be good for that? Are you that kind of a real life living example of what one can do?
That's what we're working towards doing. Yeah, the new garden is just barely established. A lot of it was just planted last year. So our hope is that in the next couple of years, we will be able to provide those examples.
So you're like a quasi cross between, I mean, you know, research, botanical gardens and an actual gardens you can visit.
Yes, definitely. But we're mostly a display garden. So if you went there now, the ground is carpeted with bulbs. We focus on daffodils quite a bit. We have maybe it's like 500,000 daffodils or something planted. So you'd just be seeing the beginning of that starting to emerge.
For those of you at home, I live in a wee town called Ballybohol, translated loosely back into Irish. That's Ballia, Bacolia, translated back into English. It's the town of the staff, called so because of St. Patrick's Crozier would have resided there for some amount of time. We won't get into the entire history of that, but you know, where I live, on it's about an acre of ground, and I planted 1,200 daffodils up the drive of my house. That sounds very grand. I say the drive, you know, it's essentially just a big space of green with daffodils, but I planted them below ground into the lawn so that they come up every year, and by the time I'm cutting the grass, I'm able to mow over the top of the daffs. When you plant, how many daffodils?
I think it's between 400,000 and 500,000. Maybe we've lost count by now.
How?
That we have people on staff that keep track of this, though, but I'm not one of them.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's just stick with the let's call it 400,000 just for argument's sake, or 455. We'll compromise. When you do that, how does that whole process work? Because that I felt like I was a big man there for a minute with like 1,200, and you've just fly squatted me to the left-hand side.
No, we have a pretty large staff, but mostly a lot of our labor comes from volunteers. So we'll send out, the whole staff will gather up in the fall, and someone has already laid out the daffodils, usually between perennials or roses or shrubs. It's more of like an understory planting to keep spring exciting. And then we'll all go out there in the fall and just dig for hours and just plant.
How long does it take to plant, even with the plant and all the stuff?
So let's see. You know, it really depends on the size of the bulb.
But, oh, don't get technical on me with 400,000 cheapers. I mean, come on, man. You kind of, what do you think?
It takes a long time.
It takes a while. Yeah. Wait, 3 weeks, 4 weeks?
You know, yeah, about a month, yeah.
Right. Okay. Mine took me a day. And at that, I was listening to Chris's podcast. In the meantime, stop for a cup of coffee, lay down for a little. I'm joking. You know, it was at that level. Wow. All right. If let's get into this slightly, because I know one of your areas of expertise is medicinal plants. Mm-hmm. How and why? I mean, I know you mentioned your mother-in-law and she might have dabbled in a little bit of that. I say dabbled as in she obviously wasn't one of the heads at Red Butte Gardens. So she might have been doing it, let's say, more on a domestic level. Is that I don't want to upset your mother-in-law either.
No, you're good,
you know?
You're good.
But how did you evolve into that? Was it through her? And equally, when I ask you that question, you know, you can turn around and you can watch your elders doing it till the cows come home, but you're either turned off it or you're turned on. You're drawn in. You develop what I would call a grow, or that love for that. You mm-hmm. seem to have developed that grow and literally taken it to the next level.
Yeah, I was really pulled in. You know, it was right at a time when I was just becoming interested in plants and I had no idea what was out there. And I had no idea that people even really used plants for medicine. I was basically an idiot. And I started learning all of these different things and I realized, like, wow, I can take care of myself on a base level. You know, if I break my arm, obviously I'm going to the hospital, but it's just for like minor ailments. It's wonderful to know how to take care of yourself. It's very empowering.
This isn't, we're not going on a homeopathic level here.
No. Like tinctures and teas and stuff like that.
Okay, so
poultices.
Sorry, backtrack. We're back to this. We've got these long botanical kind of names. Explain this to me like I'm a 2-year-old.
So a tincture is just an alcoholic extract of a plant.
That's okay.
What you do is you can take a fresh plant or a dried plant. You chop it up into little pieces. You put it in a jar of vodka or Everclear. You let it sit for 6 to 8 weeks. You strain it out. You dilute it a little if you need to. And there's your plant medicine.
Did you just lose a half bottle of vodka?
Well, you make it better.
When you literally took this to the next level, and it seems to me that the baton was passed, if you allow me to put it this way, and correct me if I'm wrong, but from your mother-in-law to you, does your now wife turn around at times and go, come on, Fritz, Jesus, you know, put the thing, come on, seriously, does it get annoying for her?
Does. There's a little bit of, there's more than a little bit of eye rolling from her. Yeah, it's, yeah.
What does she do?
Well, she grew up with it, so she's a little bit, she's tired of it a little bit, maybe. And I say, you know, why don't you just take this? And she goes, oh, you know, it's a virus. It's not going to do anything. In fact, that's what happened right before I came here.
We've got an Anne and Robert moment all over again. Once this goes live, Fritz is getting a dig in the left arm. How and what, if people want to go and experience Red Butte Gardens, what's the best way to do it?
You know, the best way is just to come up there and just walk around. Just put the map away and just wander. We've got fantastic trails. You can wander along the creek. You can walk. We have an oak tunnel. If you can imagine, it's a tunnel of oak trees. It's really pretty wonderful.
To be fair, I can't imagine that. Has the tree fallen down? You've hollowed it out through the center.
Yeah, they're almost fallen down. So they're sort of leaning towards each other over a wide pathway.
He did that very well over the airwaves, I should say.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's say it's an upside down V.
That's okay. I've got that visually now.
Yeah.
Well, why do you do things like that? And again, and let's be frank about this. In garden design, you turn around and you say, I want to do, you know, let's say something 17th, 18th century. It's a series of symmetry. Mm-hmm. There's a grand patio at the back of the house with box hedging or books of sempervirens into squares or plants in between. And you see this slightly scantily clad lady made of stone and you walk towards her. And essentially it's a T. It's a 90 degree angle and a series of. But when you turn around to a curator or a director or a boss and you say, I have a cunning plan, Baldrick. What I actually want to do is take a series of trees, fold them at 45 degree angles. By the way, they're going to be oak. And I also want to plant 455,000 in this case, because we've compromised daffodil bulbs. Like what happens for you? Because... Sorry, it was. Yeah, okay. I'll take the giggle. It's allowed. But I usually deserve it when people laugh. But like on a serious note, when you turn around and do that, you can have critics for that, and you can equally get applause. The difference in your place is, whilst I might design and build a garden for somebody who is, let's say, a mom, a husband, a wife and three kids who has a back garden that needs to be done, it's that usually that it's something that they want. And they've asked me to put it together or design it and build it. In your case, you've got every member of the public and the only, like, passing through. And that's like me watching, you know, Ireland play Wales in rugby is probably a really bad example. And say, why didn't you bring him on? And then you essentially realise, well, I am not the rugby Irish national team manager. I'm just a guy sitting on a couch with a six-year-old daughter and a dog asleep at his feet. You know, but you get the pundits and you get the critics. And whether I've done show gardens or not, if you're paying 35 quid a ticket in the door, you're entitled to say, well, I dislike or like that. You're not entitled to insult me, but you're entitled to criticize it. Yeah. Do you get that? Do you take that to heart? Does that get you?
When people criticize, you know, a little bit it did at first, but the oak tunnel I'm talking about is a almost naturally occurring phenomenon. But in my own design work, when people do criticize it, especially the first couple of years, I was a little offended. But, you know, it's just an opportunity to try to meet the client's needs.
Okay, but your client in this case is the Chris Hollifields of the world. That they're walking through your gardens and they're saying to you, okay, Chris wouldn't say this. He's a nice guy, but you know what I mean? You did?
I do have a good story about that.
Go for it.
When I first started working there, I took over an area called the Fragrance Garden. It's a meadow planting. Perennials, a lot of annuals, a lot of bulbs. Really a difficult area to keep looking good all the time. And I was working bent over, sweating, and I heard someone come and say, now come look at the armpit of Red Butte Garden. I just turned around and I didn't say anything, but that was my motivation. And I spent the next 3 years just, you know, tearing out what I could, cleaning it out as best I could. All of this in between weddings. So, but I did turn it around. And so, yeah, it's a good motivator to hear people criticize your work.
Do you take the compliments well? Apparently, I, as an Irishman, don't take that very well at all, but or just can't do them. I don't know. Well, in Ireland, compliments tend to come twofold. You can be insulted and take it as a compliment, and you know, and you can turn around to your dad and say, "I was in such a newspaper in the United States, and some of you were talking to me earlier on, and you're aware of this," and your dad will text you back saying, "Well, your sister got a new dog," you know. There's a grounding kind of there. The alternative is I can high five you and high praise you, and you'll turn around and say somebody wants only these small daffodil bulbs to the left hand side, or the large ones, or the yellow M&Ms. What do you do when you get that compliment? Because by all accounts, and from talking around and to your credit, Red Butte is something to be really very proud of.
You know, I just try to remember what I got complimented on. Try to carry that forward in the future. Into other designs, you know.
If people want to go there, do they charge in? Is there a fee paying in the door?
They do, yep. There's a fee. I believe it's $14 for adults and 10 or 9 for children.
Okay. Is it worth that?
Yes, hold on a sec. It definitely is. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
We've got our first heckler in the audience. Security is on the way in. They're going to remove her. Funnily enough, it's one of our former guests, Anne Torrance. It's going to be a funny one when we edge out of the show, Anne, and just leave Robert in. I'm only joking. So for those of you who are listening to this in the future, if this is your first time tuned to the Sod Show, Anne and Robert have the Stray Arrow Ranch, and it is a wonderful little gem of an interview, to be quite fair. When you finish this one, go back and take a listen to it and you're absolutely going to love it. What's it like living in Salt Lake City?
It's pretty incredible. There's a lot to do outdoors and the weather is really good. I think we have over 300 days of sunshine a year.
Okay, that's strange for an Irishman to hear. Yeah,
you can see how sunburnt I am.
Well, you've got the red hair thing going on. You obviously don't do it. So how does that work? Because
I wear a hat that is as close to a novelty sombrero as I can get and still look semi-respectable. It's wider than my shoulders. It's ridiculous.
Chris, have you paid the money in the door? Have you done that thing?
Of course.
And it's worth every penny?
It's worth every penny. Everybody needs to go check it out at least once.
Okay, well, listen, what can we say? This was the last of today's interviews with Fritz. The last of the days, this day. It's the day before St. Patrick's Day. You're obviously getting this in a little bit in the future. We've got a lot of people to thank. We heard from our sponsors earlier on, from Chris from I Am Salt Lake Podcast, a wonderful podcast, if you get a chance to listen to it. I should also add, there is one lady at the very back of the room who has managed to get this Irish man away from home, from Dublin, for St. Patrick's Day. My first time in the United States, my first time in Salt Lake City, and my first time away from home for St. Patrick's Day. And the question was raised last night whilst I came off stage from doing a very poor rendition of Otis Redding's Mustang Sally. Now, in my head, I should say, I sounded very like him, and I had the Gladys Knight and the Pips moves to an absolute T. And then it was played back to me on video this morning, and I said, please do not put that anywhere near, anywhere live on social media, or I will re-edit your interview and re-release it. To that, Melinda Maservi of Time and Place, Salt Lake City, please take a bow. Fritz, if people want to get in touch, if they want to take a look, if they're from Dublin, if they're from Ireland, if they're from the UK and they're listening to this, how do they best find out about Red Butte? Are you on the Twitter, the web?
Just go to redbuttegarden.org, and then we have an Instagram page as well, just Red Butte Garden.
Excellent stuff indeed. Okay, well, from, what can I say, from beautiful, very beautiful Salt Lake City to the beautiful people who have turned up today, and genuinely thank you so much. It really does mean an absolute, so much to me, to our sound men, to our team, to the Mandate Press. We're going to play out a little bit of, as we should, a little bit of Trad Irish and our in-house band for this evening, Rusted Steel. Ladies and gentlemen, at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow and Sideshow.com. Loyal Leparic, Shunadiv, catch you soon. Take care. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Cheers, Slán. Bye-bye. We also have our first guest of the show. It is Zenaida Zengo. Did I pronounce that correctly, Zenaida?
Zenaida.
Zenaida. Okay, that's my Irish twang, and I won't even try to pronounce that correctly again. Chris, from I Am Salt Lake podcast. How are you, my good man?
Doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, it's a pleasure to have you. How's your St. Patrick's Day been?
It's been good. You know, yeah. Kind of low-key this year, but no complaints.
Why was that?
I just didn't want to go out and party with the amateurs, you know? Just
That's Rusted Real, ladies and gentlemen. They're our in-house band. Thanks very much, lads, for coming along. Company today is Mary Beth Janerich. Mary Beth, how are you?
I'm great, Peter. How are you?
I'm fantastic, as always, Mary Beth. On today's show, however, we do have a fine lady and a very fine gentleman. I did refer to Robert Mark, who's to my right-hand side, that John Travolta had just walked into the room when he came in earlier on. But also to his left-hand side is Anne Torrance. Hey, we've got some people, some very kind people who've been involved behind the scenes. Chris, do you want to tell me who they are?
We got some great people, the wonderful folks at 90.9 KRCL, Bare Bones Living, the Hibernian Society of Utah, the King's English Bookshop in the Wasatch Community Gardens.
And brought to you by Time and Place. And we've got our in-house band this evening, the Homo Leviticus. Chris, my good man down the back, to our sound man, the Mandate Press, where we are at this moment in time, our wonderful bar staff down the back. Our guest on today's show, I am honoured and delighted to say, is Fritz Coleman from Red Butte Gardens. Fritz, how are you? Touched on this earlier on, but Melinda Maservi promised this big Egypt that I was going to have the best St. Patrick's Day ever.
Dead air.
We're still live. For those of you listening at home, what you can't see is Anne is actually thinking of the right answer to give live over the microphone. Paul Twigg from the University of Nebraska, you're very welcome to the Sideshow. Aldine, the punk rock farmer. Aldine Strychnine, how are you, my good man?
In fact, I traced it back. The very first interaction we had at all was I voted on some poll you had about where it was the best place in Ireland to go camping.
Right. I don't.
I voted for Galway, and I don't know if you went there.
Nobody goes camping in Galway. The weather is terrible. It rains sideways nonstop 364 days of the year, and then the other day it snows. Melinda Maservi, for all that you did on the final episode from Salt Lake, can we give her a round of applause?
Now, we met in Texas, in Houston, and I had gone there with a different cowboy and changed horses in Texas. And I looked at him one day, and I said, "Darling," in my very best Texas accent, because I grew up in California. I said, "Darling, I love you."
Ladies and gentlemen, live from Salt Lake City, with thanks to Time and Place, and for you for turning up this evening. Thank you so much. Okay, this is the point at which Sinead Ezengo has now lost the marriage proposal from the previous episode.
Thank you so much, Peter. Friends for life.
It's been an absolute honor.
Thanks, Laura. And hey, Nick.
Bye, Leparik Shunadeev. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Cheers, Sloan. Bye-bye.
That's it. We're good.
Thanks, Peter.